Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a truth terrorist. I'm a knowledge gangster. I'm a black history hitman. I'm a lie killer, urban gorilla. I gotta be a roughneck.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, trying to make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin tail pro.
Show,
they got me started, lying hearted, I'm the new Mufasa. And I'm all about Umoja, first in Gruz Usaba. Let's bring back the black families, we need our father. Single mama, son and daughter, that's root of the problem. Wise up, we wise up, unity so powerful. Black banks, black schools, black owned, black power moves. You telling lies, you think this shit gon' be televised. Black power, be scared guys, that be standing there like they paralyzed, huh? We say fuck the system, cause we above the system. We keep ARs and pistols, shotguns that's worth the crystal. But that's for self-defense, make sure we have no issues. Be sure to leave it at the door if you have it with you. This for them freedom fighters, that lost their freedom. Until they freedom, we screaming carpe diem. This for the general, King Khalid Muhammad. We gon' make your day a holiday, I fucking promise. Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, tryna make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin tail pro.
RBG, 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 RBG. My sisters, my brothers, the council, the elders, shit, that's really all I need. We suited, we booted, don't do it, you stupid, we head to the armory. Black woman and goddess, regardless, my heart just don't fuck with misogyny. Bullshit, I don't tolerate it. Melanated, so you gotta hate it. Barack fucked up another conversation. Trump finna get inaugurated, damn. Unify or die, NBPP.org.
First and foremost, the new Black Panther Party, no other Black Panther Party, we are not violent. We are for self-defense and self-determination. The most violent group in this country are the police. What is taking place by the police department to black people across this country is ethnic cleansing and genocide. It has escalated since the day that Barack Obama was inaugurated in 2008. We have a people who are only 13% of the population, yet we make up 80% of the prisons. We have 50% unemployment rate in the black community, and it's actually even more than that because they're not counting our people that are in the prison. The 13th Amendment says you cannot be made a slave or indentured servant unless you commit a crime. The 14th Amendment forced our people to be subjects of this government. We never had any say in that. We need our own nation.
Black power, brothers and sisters. Black power, you're listening to the new Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. Tonight, we are continuing. We'll play part 10 of an 11-part series in which we have been running the playback from the grand jury testimony for the Human Rights Tribunal against or bringing all the evidence forward to verify and prove that the COVID pandemic and the vaccine biological weaponry campaign was a crime against humanity. We'll continue to hearing testimonies from attorneys, doctors, lawyers, scientists, virologists, pathologists, historians, economists, and victims as we are documenting and making sure for the record this information gets out. And upon the conclusion of the testimony on tomorrow, We will be coming forward in the following days and weeks with what's next and what we should be doing as a people. But we were going to go ahead and play this clip, keep the information going. Black Power, part 10 of an 11-part series. Tomorrow will be the final day of testimony. Take notes.
All right.
Yes, now we can
now
hear you.
Now I switched on my microphone. Yeah. I'm very glad to be able to speak here after these three very good and profound presentations. I really don't know what to say anymore. But it's a very good foundation to speak about. So let me try with it. Okay. I try to put it in around 20 or maybe 30 minutes. I will again pick up a little bit of the background, but focusing on inequality, then the increasing debt load, which was already mentioned several times, the role of COVID, and then I change a little bit and try to look to the real background, in my opinion, and of course in the end, introduce some possible solutions. So, what we have seen during the last 40 years, more or less, in the beginning, Patrick mentioned in the 70s that there has been a shift, and you can see this shift, this simple chart here, which shows the productivity of the workers raised more or less the same rate as hourly compensation, but in the 70s, it has changed. Productivity continued to grow, but hourly compensation not. So a wedge unfolded and inequality went up enormously. And that's a worldwide phenomenon. It's not only in the United States. It's also in Europe and in most industrialized countries. And just one hint is the worker compensation would have increased along with productivity. Today, the minimum wage would be $26 instead of 7.25. So we don't speak about peanuts, but about real huge sums of money. And this rising inequality led to growing investments, led to increased growth, because all this money which went to the top 1 or 5% of the population had to be reinvested, went to the funds, the banks, insurance companies, and drove growth quite a lot. What we can see here, data from the Census Bureau of the United States during the last 40 years until shortly before COVID, we see a GDP per capita growth of 86% in real terms. But median income in the same time span increased by only 18%. So mass income didn't grow at the same pace as the supply side. So we had a wedge between supply and demand. And when I first read those numbers, I nearly couldn't believe it. But what happened with how did all the people finance this? Beautiful new cars, beautiful new mobile phones, and so on, burgers. And the answer is debt, as we have already heard by Jan, for example. So we have seen unfolding a huge wedge, a growth wedge, funded by debt. For example, real household debt in Western countries increased sixfold between 1980 and 2010. So that's a pace which just cannot go on that like this. And if you put it the other way around, if you put all the mass income of the people to buy real goods and services, so if you just divide the increase in median income by the US GDP per capita, you get 0.63, which for me was again a shock, because it means that to supply all the goods and services needed, we just could shut down every third company, every third hotel, every third burger company, and so on, because the mass demand, mass income just hasn't kept pace. And that's the very, in my opinion, the very reason for the financial crisis and our crisis just before COVID. So this increasing debt level, we can reconstruct it here, but Jörg already mentioned it, and also Leslie mentioned it. Total debt is just increasing. This is total debt as a percentage of GDP. Back 50 years back, for $1 of GDP, we just had $1 of debt. Today we have $2.5 of debt. And here at the outbreak of the first financial crisis, we had 195% debt, so nearly $2 debt per $1 GDP. That was too high and caused the financial crisis. And the remedy for this debt, which was too high, was more debt. That's no fake news. It was really the remedy for the was more debt. So what we can see here is a huge jump in debt during 2020 in percent of GDP. If you add the financial sector, you come up to about 360%. So each dollar of GDP corresponds today to $3.6 of debt, and you can never pay back this debt. It's what also Patrick, Leslie, and Björn already said. Yeah. And if you look at the quality of the debt, it's also been going down. Here you have a chart looking at the triple B rated debt and U.S. high yield debt, only the U.S. market. So the bad debt, the low rating, have increased a lot. But for me, as an ex-investment banker, I've been an investment banker for 7 years before going to academia. From a financial point of view, from a banker's point of view, it's it doesn't look pretty well. And as already mentioned, it's not only debt that's been exploding, but also the central banks. We hear the central bank balance sheet of the U.S. said it was about 0.8 trillion before the first financial crisis, and now it's up to $9 trillion. So it, the central bank money, so the quantitative easing, the fresh money printing, is it's increased by 11 times if you put this all this at the crisis mode. And the same applies to the ECB. You see, the central bank of the freshly printed money increased nearly tenfold in within 15, 17 years. So what's the result? A lot of checks have been written on the future, especially during COVID. I just, in a few minutes, come to COVID. We need some way a debt or money cut. It's just necessary. It will never be, it can never be paid back. And there are at least six or seven solutions, but I think the three most probable is either we'll see inflation like the United States did in 1950, when prices just increased and debt was deflated, or we'll see a financial crisis, depression, and maybe deflation, or war also can be a solution, of course, because we have a huge wedge between supply and demand, and you can close the wedge also by just destruction processes, you just like 1945 and the Hiroshima and Nagasaki and Central Europe, you just decrease production to catch up, to close the wedge. So which of these solutions might come? Now, what's the role of COVID in these structures? What I told you now was more or less the situation until COVID. If you have a short look at history, in 1907, we had a big financial crisis. Nearly no one knows about it. I've been in, I studied economic history. My internet connection is bad. It tells me. Does it work?
We can still hear and see you.
Okay. If you look back at the crisis of 1907, John Pierpont Morgan then had owned 141 banks and huge iron and steel complexes. He was one of the richest men in the world together with Rockefeller. And he caused this world financial crisis by not revolving his loans. And on August 22, and so a huge crash ensued until October, and John Pierpont Morgan got rid of his most important competitors. So that was the biggest deal in his life, in my opinion. He just increased his wealth tremendously. And what's the message? You can earn much more money during crisis, during depressions, and even during war than in peaceful times. So there are always people who profit from crisis. And if you have a look to, at the situation since COVID came to us, every day of lockdown fetches billions in profits to the big companies and to the big billionaires behind. For the big players, just like they, like JP Morgan, then are eliminating their competitors, the small and medium-sized companies. As the most famous example is Amazon versus retail shops. Yeah, the small shops close down, and Amazon and Jeff Bezos grow richer and richer and richer. But how do we achieve to that governments really will introduce lockdowns? Well, you have just systematically to generate fear of death and illness, and that's exactly what happened because media. As Leslie told, the media are in the hands of some billionaire families. The media ownership structure is very, very concentrated, and either the media are in the hand of some very big investors or families, or they're government controlled, and they're all interested in generating fear of death and illness, and that's how it works. And in those situations, in those crisis situations, cash is king. And the big companies and the big players do know about that. Last year, the 3,000 biggest companies in the world increased their cash holdings by nearly one-third. So it blew up. And the stories from a purely financial point of view, very simple. You have huge cash reserves. The small and medium-sized companies don't. You wait until they go bankrupt and it's yours. Either you pay a very small amount or you get them for free or get their locations because they're just bankrupt. And our beloved Klaus Schwab and Thierry Mallaret said exactly this in their book. In France and the UK, several industry bosses estimate that up to 75% of independent restaurants might not survive the lockdowns and subsequent social distancing measures. The large chains and fast food giants, well, of course, they have huge cash reserves and they know the story and they know the playbook maybe. And that's exactly the result that we can see today is that the U.S. billionaire wealth surged during the pandemic by over 2.1 trillion, an increase of 70%. That's a huge increase. I think it's not a coincidence. And today, the share of the U.S. wealthiest people is higher than ever, even higher than at times of Rockefeller and J.P. Morgan. So what we see is a huge increase in financial power, the pyramid getting very much sharper. And now I think we have several possibilities to overcome this debt load, which is too high. Well, either it could be inflation, but if you wonder how would a very small elite, a billionaire elite, how would they get the highest profit, how they get the highest return, can really get rid of all this small and medium-sized company, get all their market share, or both. As far as I know, DuPont, the big American chemical corporation increased profits 60-fold during World War II. So there are always huge profits during war times. So I wonder what's the incentive, what's the interest, what's the incentive for the really wealthy people, and they have not so big an incentive to have inflation, but the best thing to make really huge profits is either a deep financial crisis, depression, or war. And financial power always translates to political power, to influence in the scientific community, as Leslie really, really showed in a great way. I think I don't need to speak about that. You know, there's a more or less corrupt elite power, and I think this picture's have been taken long before Mr. Trump became president. This time it's your turn, next time it's mine. It doesn't matter who's the president, really. And what's behind, and that's for me a little bit, that's new. I want to give you an explanation, pretty much spiritual explanation based on an anthroposophic view of Rudolf Steiner, which in my view is the best explanation, at least I have. Rudolf Steiner says back more than 100 years that aristocracy shall be restored. That's the political aim. You use the phrase of revolution, the phrase of democracy, you use these masks to attain as much power as possible. And how to do it? Via private capital of small group of oligarchs. But he said this nearly 100 years ago, and I think it's very, 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 very actual. And it goes on, and it goes a little bit deeper. The most efficient way nowadays to extend power over as many people as possible is the economic way, the economic subordination. For example, if you have to look for a job, if you have a high debt load. But this is only the means, the ends. What is intended in reality is something completely different. It's about freedom of the will. That's the real target, which ought to be eliminated. The real purpose is to transform a society in which freedom is possible into a society of slavery. And Patrick spoke of just evil things that are happening, of dignity of man, which is very bad treated. Leslie spoke about no innocent explanation or inconceivable things that are happening, and I want to dig a little bit deeper into that. There are different tools. The adversary, now it's becoming quite spiritual, the unlawful prince of this world can choose, for example, hunger and social chaos. Then physical power, pressure, compulsion are used instead of the free will of humanity or just martial law. If you introduce martial law, if you create chaos, if you create hunger and fear, then your freedom will be just reduced to maybe nearly nothing, as we cruelly learned in Germany from 1933 to 45. So, but in my conviction, it goes far deeper than financial interest. The aim, what Steiner says back in 1919, this is this very important choice man faces today. To return to be like an animal, to become more animal than any animal, this is exactly what Mephisto tries to achieve, or to absorb, to take in spirituality. I think in the background, it's a battle, a fight between materialism and spirituality. And if you exercise the spiritual way, you know that sound knowledge can only proceed from sound human beings. According to the Latin saying, mens sana in corpore sano, but if you turn it around, what we see during the last 2 years in COVID measures, it's exactly the contrary. Masks, school children running around with masks even when they're exercising. No exercise, stay inside, don't meet others, the inoculation. All these COVID measures make us ill, and in my eyes are intended to make us ill. And if the body isn't really sound anymore, it's harder to achieve sound knowledge. If you turn the Latin saying round, mens sana in corpore sano, if the body isn't sound anymore, you cut off the people from their spiritual, from their divine, from their religious dimension. I think that's behind, there are powers behind. And just two small explanations or some examples. Mephisto in Goethe's Faust and the Tragedy Faust says at one point, he calls it reason, and it's only used to be more animal than any animal. So we use our intelligence to become even more animal than animal. And there are two bold examples in my eyes. For example, porn. The porn traffic is...
I think we have just lost you. Christian, I think we have lost you. If you can try and reconnect, that should solve the problem. Let us see if he can reconnect so that he can finish his presentation, because I do believe that he has a slightly different outlook for us. I hope it's not the war scenario. I'll check with Corvin, because he is probably in touch with him. Okay. Corvin is telling us that he has to dial in again. There's no other way, so we'll have to wait for a few seconds. In the meantime, what do you think, Leslie? What's the most plausible outcome? Do you really think it's going to be war? Is that what the Davos clique is going to choose, or? Is there another way out for us? We all realize that the crash is inevitable, but can we do something to stem this off? Can we be quick enough to create our own parallel societies, our own regional money, for example, or will we not be able to do that quickly enough?
I personally see this as a... You know, people say to me all the time, oh, thank goodness, COVID is going away, it's over. Mm-hmm. I say, no, it's not over. It's far from over, because they haven't achieved their agenda yet, right? It was never about public health, and the agenda is still going to be attempted. And so I follow someone named Martin Armstrong. I think he's one of the most brilliant people alive today, and he has the model. Mm-hmm. Has predicted all sorts of things. I won't go into much detail about it, but his model predicts that there's going to be about a decade of strife. And to me, it seems like that's the most likely, most plausible outcome, because, you know, look at what Trudeau's doing. The truckers have made it very clear that they've shut it down. It's been over 3 weeks, and he's not backing down. He won't speak to them. He's now freezing their assets. He's doing all these things. These people are evil. I mean, when Patrick was speaking so many times, he said these things, and I wanted to say, yes, the word is evil, mm-hmm. right? These people are evil, and they're not going to give up without a fight. And so I think that humanity has this immense opportunity in front of us, and the question is, how does it unfold? And I just hope that more and more people wake up and demand that we have freedom, and that we, you know, hold these people accountable. And so I think it's going to be a very rocky road, personally, for a number of years. And what happens politically and financially, you know, even during wars, think about when France was occupied by Germany in the Second World War, they still went about their lives, or actually more in the First World War, they still went about their lives. There's still black market economies and things like this. And so I think it's very likely that there will be this immense upheaval, but it's not like we go to the Dark Ages. And how we get out of it, I think that we can make our... I mean, I've been involved in my local food community for over 15 years. Mm-hmm. I'm a healthcare practitioner. I'm a homeopath. I have my own medicine. You know, like we've been building these things in our own community, and I think that's what everybody should be doing, because I think that's what's going to help us to weather the storm. And ultimately, I think there will have to be a day of reckoning for everybody. And the question is, how long does that take?
Mm-hmm. So the surprising thing to me is that everybody whom we have interviewed as expert witnesses at one point or another came to realize and told us that there is something really important going on, apart from all the statistics, apart from the numbers, apart from our legal efforts, and that's spirituality. And all of a sudden we have a professor of economics who is also pointing in that direction. So it does appear to me, and also yesterday, for example, when we interviewed, when we got testimony from two psychologists, Meredith Miller, she too said, if people understand what's going on and rise up, a higher power is going to come to our rescue. Now, that sounds like something from science fiction, but it appears that even economists agree on this. There is something other than materialism. There is a spiritual tie to all of us. Is that something that, do you agree with that assessment, that if we rise up, if we understand what's going on and rise up, there is another, a higher power that's going to come to our rescue, that's going to come to our aid at least?
Well, 100%. I mean, first of all, I want to say, I think what Christian's been saying is so spot on. I mean, first of all, Rudolf Steiner actually said that vaccines would be used to actually destroy our connection to spirit. He wrote that over a century ago, and I think that's a very interesting thing. And have you guys all heard of Yuval Noah Harari and seen the video clip of him talking about all of you people who think that you're unique individuals, who think there's a soul or something inside of you? It's over. That's what he says. It's over. We can hack you all. It's over. Your idea of being an individual human, it's over. I'll send you the clip. I think you guys should play it. To me, that is exactly what's happening. We are in the midst of a spiritual war between those who believe that you're nothing but a bag of bones on the one hand, and those who believe that we are all individual, unique creations of some higher power, right? A manifestation of, I liken it to being that we're all spiritual beings having a physical experience. And I think that's exactly what's playing out. And these people who think that they can inject us with nanotechnology and control our brains and hack us and, you know, push AI on us and all these things, that's exactly what's playing out. Mm-hmm. So I 100% believe that there's something bigger than us, and that, yes, just standing in truth, standing up for what's right and for our freedom ultimately will bring in more of that energy, and I believe we will win.
Let me interject something
with
that, Reiner. From an economic point of view right now, this is my favorite lifelong topic, by the way, even though I've been studying technocracy for many years. I would rather be studying economics. The problem with economics, modern-day economics, is the tools that we used to use simply just don't work anymore. They're very unstable, and they're not producing results that can guide us into the future. Well, there's a reason for that. That's because capitalism and free market economics is just being shattered. But we're at the top of a super cycle right now. Undeniable, in my opinion, when you see the charts like some of what he just showed, we're at the top of a cycle where we're tipping over into a period of not only demographically reduction in humanity, and that's being helped along by programs today, but there's already demographically a winter ahead of us because world population is decreasing like crazy. And that also brings to light economically that we're also on the verge, just tipping over into probably the greatest deflationary cycle that the world has ever seen. And when you explode debt, when companies go bankrupt, when people go bankrupt, when value of property go down, whatever, this is deflation. Some people confuse that with inflation, but even in the case of Germany in the 20s, yes, prices went up, but what happened to that currency? Is there any of it around today? No, there's not. It got completely decimated. That was the ultimate deflation when it finally popped. So we're rolling over into this period of deflation right now anyway, and we're getting, you know, this so-called Humpty Dumpty that sits at the top of the wall. Humpty Dumpty's given a little push. You know, they're pushing him off the wall to make sure that capitalism dies right now, et cetera. But what's going to happen when this happens? If the world economy gets reduced to ashes, what's going to happen, in my opinion, is that there's going to be a great reset amongst humanity. There's going to be a great reset of relationships. You remember some of the times in New York City when the lights went out? and everybody thought, oh no, it's going to be anarchy. They're going to be killing each other. It's going to be horrible. But what happened? People came out in the streets. They started talking with each other. They started hugging each other. They realized that, hey, I haven't seen you cousins for 6 years. And they had a wonderful time. It was a wonderful reuniting of humanity. I can see this happening. If they reduce the world to ashes and they think that we're going to come out of that other side and say, oh, please help us, Mr. Technocrat, I have a feeling that the people who have been reconnected on the ground level are just going to say, get out of my face. We don't want to even see you around here anymore. And they're going to reject them once and for all. It's going to be painful in a lot of ways to us going down, to headed down to economic hardship that may be coming. But I'll tell you what, there's nothing more important in the history of the world than connection of humans to humans. That's what it's all about. Family to family, humans to humans. We all find in the end that we're so similar. We're so much alike. And in the process of that, we're going to go back to the things probably that meant something to people from decades and centuries ago that have been thrown out of our current system. That is, for instance, you know, things like morality, things like ethics, things like the Bible. Imagine that. People would go back and get any truth out of the Bible. I think there's going to be a great resurgence, honestly, in human connection. And I think that's potentially going to be a very, very good thing. I look at it though, I say, I don't want to go that, you know, where I'm out in the street and lights are off and all that kind of stuff, but you know what? This could be for our own good in the end, depending on how we take it.
And I think if I remember correctly, 9 months after those blackouts, there was a surge in births, right? So that's another type of connection that seems to still be working. Okay.
That's right.
I wanted to make a comment too, Reiner, and Patrick, that's very well said. I think that what is happening as a result of the evil that's so in our faces and is so apparent is that we have to wake up.
Yeah.
And when they cause us enough pain, when there is enough pain, we want to change whatever has been going on, because continuing to do the same thing is going to continue to get the same result. So we start waking up, and I really feel that this is what is happening across the globe. We can't ignore anymore the evil that's happening here. And they are in the minority, and we have to remember we're in the majority. And as we wake up and we have the sight of God on us, I think that it's an incredible opportunity for our whole planet to evolve. And it's just going to take the critical mass. We're not there yet, but it's not that far off.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things I also wanted to caution people about, just before we lost Christian, he mentioned something about it's a battle of materialism versus spirituality. And we are spiritual beings having a human experience here. That doesn't mean that we have to live in poverty or that we have to live without. I don't believe that our Creator intended that for us. And I want to caution people about the twisting of language and the twisting of propaganda that happens to us incessantly. And one of those, that whole Klaus Schwab thing, you know, shows this happy, almost stoned-looking 20-year-old, right? You will own nothing and you'll be happy. And he looks like he's absolutely stoned, right? Well, maybe that's part of the plan too. You know, you legalize marijuana and everybody can be stoned and be happy. But that's not really where we're wanting to go. Their view, they will even infiltrate the language of spirituality and twist it so that we think something is sounding good. You know, you'll own nothing and be happy. You can still be a wonderful spiritual being connected to God. You don't have to have anything. We'll take care of you. Just like they have bastardized our language with pandemic, with cases, with the word vaccine, all of these words, sustainability. That the only one that's sustainable for are the wealthy. It's not sustainable for us. All of these words, progressive, that used to mean advanced thinking. No, not anymore. It means regression of thinking. So we have to be very careful not to let their language start framing what is spiritual for us. And the connections, the human connections that we need, we're social creatures, the fun times that we need, having dinners together, having parties together, entertainment, all of that is very necessary for us. And we can have all of that. And I think Leslie's idea of making it local, extremely local, local food production, local healing, local exchange of whatever we're exchanging, our services and goods. And I think that that is a solution, is get down to the local level to where we create and step out as much as we can, step out of that particular matrix, because it is dystopian and dysfunctional.
Thank you, Anna. Christian is back. Do you want to continue, Christian? We picked up where you left off. We're talking about spirituality all of a sudden, and I couldn't believe it because these are lawyers and you're an economist, rational people, and all of a sudden we're into spirituality. Please continue, if you will.
I'm sorry. We are here in Costa Rica, and with a complete internet breakdown in the entire region, obviously. So I was nearly done. It's nearly done.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, and I, frankly speaking, I got some heart beating of my heart, because I normally never speak about all these things, but that's my approach since 15 years, and it made me understand the first financial crisis and the second financial crisis and what's behind the euro area. For me, it was just a wake-up call to follow the spiritual path and do meditations, and also individual experiences in doing my meditations and so. But I normally never speak about it in public, so it's nearly the first time. So what I want to say, it's not about money. It's not about, not even about power. Power may be, but it's not about money. It's just, is the internet working?
Yeah.
For example, nearly all 12-year-old boys in Germany are playing Fortnite, which is a war game all against all. Just one survivor out of 100. They just learn to kill. And this kind of video games, of military games, of killer games has been used by U.S. military for decades before the soldiers have to kill others. For example, before the first Iraq war, they used exactly these kind of games. It's to dehumanize the young man. It's to de-empathize the young man. It's not about money. It's really about dehumanize man, and that's my central message. I think it's really a war. What Leslie said, it's just evil. No, Patrick said it's just evil, and there's no innocent explanation. As Leslie said, that's just right. There is no innocent explanation, and it is just evil. It is, in however you want to call it, it's about Mephisto, Mephistopheles, and what I also see is a huge increase in nationalism and international conflicts. I think there will be huge conflicts, not about increasing competition, fight for market shares, but Mephisto is the spirit of war. He wants to destroy. He wants to create chaos. He wants social unrest. He wants military powers to reign. He wants to eliminate freedom. These powers want to dehumanize us. And I think that's the real battle behind, even behind the big players like Bill Gates or whatsoever. These powers, they have a fight within our heart, within our breast. It's us. They have to act through us. And we, as humans, we have to decide which side are we on. So it's never these powers itself that really exercise their power, but it's always through men, through humans. They have to act through humans. And that's the power in our heart, in our mind. In my opinion. So the solutions, what do we need? Conscience. The people just must wake up. They're just deep asleep. But how to achieve it? Well, we need free press. We don't have free press. We don't have any longer free
free speech. We need free science, what Leslie told us. We need democracy instead of a monopoly of political parties, which are all corrupted by huge money transfers from those billionaires. So we have, of course, to tackle lobbyism. We need free schools, universities, financed by vouchers, not by foundations or some billionaires. And, of course, no billionaire-controlled media, no state-controlled media. That's just a no-go. It's just impossible to put all the media power in the hands of very, very few players who are of huge incentives to ignite fear, to produce fear, to make us... fear. So the concept behind is the threefold state. I won't elaborate on this. What we will need during the next months, years, probably, we will need the ancient virtues, courage, power, sincerity, honesty, compassion. And that can be developed by spiritual anchoring. Where does health really come from inner peace, self-recognition. So we should also prepare for this battle. I don't think it's over, even if now Omicron is over. I think that will arrive the next version and the next version. I think the battle, this battle is not yet over. And if we get really in a big financial depression or even in war, we have to need even more inner strength. So some kind of meditation, some kind of spiritual approach just to strengthen us in our hearts, in our minds. Where does health come from? Inner strength. Recognize yourself. It's very hard because we are lying pretty often to us. We pretend to do things for good motives and in reality about less good. So it's a hard way, this inner way of transformation, it's a hard way, but then we can feel that within us we have such a huge power. You can call it a divine power, you can call it spiritual power, whatsoever. But if you make exercises, do meditation and tread this path of inner knowledge, you feel what huge power is in us, in each of us. To find the divine within us. But does it come from inner balance, inner anchoring, inner immersion? So I think it's really about these spiritual questions in the end, at the end of the day. It's not about money. Maybe it's about power, to hegemony becoming world power. Yes, I think there might be huge conflicts between China, the US, and maybe Russia. There are strong nationalisms. I think that we will see there big conflicts. But at the end of the day, it's all about the dignity of us, the dignity of the human beings. And this dignity you can, I think, only really appreciate and know if you see something eternal in each individual, but also in the trees or in the birds, if you see these things within, and then there will dignity arise from within, and that we really treat the animals and nature in a really human way. I think it's in the end, it's there are powers behind, even powers behind these seemingly almighty families or almighty billionaires. I think even they are kind of tools. Even within them, there are some spiritual forces having their battles within their breasts and their hearts. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Christian. This is very surprising to hear from a former investment banker and a professor of economics. But it looks as though everyone agrees with you. And the most important thing is, great job. And the most important thing is that the other side agrees with that as well. They know this. They know that we have these powers and they don't. They have no access to it. And to illustrate that, we found the video you mentioned, Leslie, and we're going to play it right now so that we can all see that that is what they're fighting and that is what we must protect.
Ohne Ton.
To basically hack human beings. There is a lot of talk about hacking computers, hacking smartphones, hacking bank accounts, but the big story of our era is the ability to hack human beings. And by this I mean that if you have enough data and you have enough computing power, you can understand people better than they understand themselves,
mm-hmm.
and then you can manipulate them in ways which were previously impossible.
Mm-hmm.
And in such a situation, the old democratic system stopped functioning. We need to reinvent democracy for this new era in which humans are now hackable animals. You know, the whole idea that humans have, you know, they have this soul or spirit and they have free will and nobody knows what's happening inside me, so whatever I choose, whether in the election or whether in the supermarket, this is my free will, that's over. We need to come to terms with the fact that, no matter, again, this is where philosophy meets computer science.
Now, I would venture to say that this is what true evil looks like. It's just that I'm surprised to hear it from someone from Israel. You know what this image reminds me of? It reminds me of the banality of evil, and it reminds me of old footage from just after the war when the Israelis had caught, I think his name was Eichmann, and put him on trial in Israel. Of just evil, pure evil, but also banal evil, banality of evil. I completely agree with what you said, Christian. I just wasn't aware how true it is. I don't know. I have nothing to add to this. We have to protect this. We have to find this spirituality in each and every one of us, connect with each other. That's what it's all about, because they have no access to this. Yes, Leslie.
Now, we can all look to what's happening in Canada, I think, is a fantastic example, because, I mean, 80% or even more, I think it is, of the truckers in Canada have gotten the jab, and yet tens of thousands of them have come out, and they are from all walks of life, and they're people who are Native American and Sikh and white European and, you know, just a huge mixture of people, and they are dancing in the street. They are cleaning up the crime. They are feeding the homeless. They are, you know, celebrating freedom and joyous, you know, and just coming together joyously. And I think that what they are doing is exhibiting exactly what is our birthright and what humans should be doing and how we can and should live.
Virginie, and I'm sorry, Anna.
Thank you for confusing me with Virginie. what a compliment. So I wanted to say an often repeated saying that I've heard throughout the years, and that is, be the change that you want to see in the world. So it has to start with us, and that's what we're doing here, is we are being the change we want to see.
Thank you. Now,
thank you so much.
I'm sorry, Dexter, go ahead.
Thank you very much. Professor Kripp, thank you so much for your evidence. And I must say, when you started to bring in the spirituality, that was definitely a curveball that I did not foresee. However, I want to mention the following. When we were in the process of assembling this grand jury, we came up with a slogan, and I'm going to read a slogan to you, and it is in our media statement, and it says, empowering public conscience through natural law. Injustice to one is an injustice to all. So your evidence that you have given and the angle from the spirituality side definitely coincides with what we are currently doing with this grand jury. So thank you so much for bringing that and basically putting emphasis, because like, that is confirmation that we are on the right track. Thank you for your evidence, Professor.
Yes, thank you. And we can see this. Justice
injustice to one is injustice to all, we can see the correct reaction to that in Canada. The truckers and the people who feed them, who give them gasoline, who support them. That is what humanity is all about. And they don't know anything about this. Maybe we should end this session on this note. I'm very, very grateful for all of you being here. I'm especially grateful for Deepali joining us because I know it's very late in India. I'm especially grateful also for Judge Rui de Castro to stay with us for so long, but he will have to summarize this, and I think he's going to like this. Thank you very much, Christian. Thank you, Leslie, Bjorn, Virginie, Patrick, and Dexter, and Anna. Thank you very, very much. This was especially important.
Thank you all. Thank you all.
Thank you, everyone.
We'll see you all tomorrow. Thank you,
Reiner.
What an honor, Reiner, and all of you, to be with you.
And vice
Thank
versa.
Thank you so much.
Yes, yes.
Good morning, good day, good evening, wherever you are. Welcome to day six of the grand jury model proceeding of the Court of Public Opinion. Today, we will take a look at the other aspect that hasn't been mentioned yet. We started by getting a backdrop of what we are confronted with, historical and a geopolitical backdrop. Then we took a look at the PCR test and learned how it cannot tell us anything about infections, how there are alternative methods of treatment, and then we looked at what do the so-called vaccines do. We found out they're neither effective nor are they safe. On the contrary, they're extremely dangerous. Today, we will look at a completely different topic that needs to be looked at as a result of all of the side effects, the adverse reactions that are now, that cannot be swept under the rug anymore. But before we go into this, Judge Rui E. Fonseca de Castro will summarize the last session. Judge.
Good evening, everybody. The summary of the last of day five of grand jury model proceeding February 2022. First, Patrick Woods explained the agenda 2030 as a plan to destroy capitalism and to establish a new international economic order under the claim for sustainable development. This sustainable development, sponsored by the World Economic Forum and United Nations, advocates for scientific management of resources consumption, FinTech underlying the financial system using blockchain, digital currencies, and total surveillance. No private property resource to be held by a global trust, no privacy allowed. Also stressed out that sustainable development, also called as technocracy, is absolutely incompatible with free markets. Since free markets can die naturally, things are not so easy for the globalists as they found, the ways they found to destroy capitalism, like with the withdrawal of energy, withdrawal of resources, corrupts to the supply chain, withdrawal label, withdrawal financing, limit consumption, limit innovation, create cataclysmic events, and create disinvesting. Slogans for the new economic order that we have been seeing more often than lately, you will nothing and will be happy to start from zero and build back better. Then Leslie Manukian explained how there is going on a controlled demolition of both of our uh, of both our political and economic systems through retention of power, centralized control of businesses, assets, natural resources, and elected and unaccountable leaders, super rich elites, and the third class, zero resources for citizens, the reset of political and finance system. And why that is happening now in the U.S., because summarizing the 2008-2009 financial crisis, explosion of debt, in U.S. debt, U.S. unfunded pension liability, 2019 repo crisis, and developing countries borrowed in dollars. And in Europe is kind of the same, 2008-2009 financial crisis, did not write off bank debt, European debt not consolidated, European Central Bank owns 40% of European debt, negative interest rates since 2014, and unfunded public pensions. Well, debt cannot be kicked down the hill for longer. If you want to control people, you have to get rid of small employers. That's why the small business are being destroyed, and COVID crisis was an excuse for that. At the same time, pharma buys influence in medicine, politics, and media. How are they doing this? Through a central bank digital currency that is in the plans, tracked transitions, universal bank income, basic income, elimination of small and medium employers, banking and big tech, end of cash and surveillance. One of the reasons is to cover up the mismanagement. Beyond theories also explained how the money system creating money out of the air, moving bad assets from the bank's balance sheets to central banks, negative interest rates, inflation, and inevitable collapse are behind the motivation for the Great Reset. Transfer the debt to central banks and taxpayers. Debt impossible to be solved. Global effort to get rid of cash through digital identity and creation of a global central bank for digital currency. COVID as a deflection for the financial crisis. Christian Christ also explained the background of the rising inequality and its consequences, and the increasing debt loan and exploding money printing. Solutions world leaders found to cut debt and money, inflation, financial crisis, depression and deflation, and war. Finally, Miller explained how the interaction between psychopathic leaders and citizens developed to the present abusive relationship, leading to, for example, Stockholm Syndrome, and that there is a struggle between good and evil going on. That was a summary of the day five. Thanks.
Thank you, Your Honor. And now we will turn to Patrick Wood, who will give us an introduction to the topic that we're going to discuss today. It's about eugenics and about genocide.
And thank you, Reiner. I hope we're on live now. You can see my screen.
Yes.
And hopefully my picture is up there as well. But this is me, Patrick Wood. These are the three of the books that will be pertinent to today's topic. And they're available pretty much everywhere in the world through electronic bookstores and or physical bookstores that are able to order books for you. We're going to cover some material quickly here in the time that I have. And I'm titling my topic today, Biodiversity, which I'll explain that term as we go along. Subtitle, The Genetic Takeover of All Living Things. This is going to be a modern look at what's happened in the last 25 to 30 years on how eugenics has snuck up on us in the most unexpected way. But nonetheless, it's here, it's real, and it's in our face. Well, actually, it's in our arms, too, I guess. But you're all familiar with this particular slide. the statement, the pandemic, says Klaus Schwab, represents a rare but narrow window of opportunity to reflect, reimagine, and reset our world. This is described in great detail on the World Economic Forum's website, but it's a boring read, and very few people actually go there and partake of it. But Time magazine did run in late 2020 this cover showing the world being reconstructed. Now, there's no imagination going on here, but the scaffolding is up, and the doors are open, and things are being done to the world that nobody voted for, but they're out there doing it anyway. This is a big picture, a great big picture of what's going on. So I want to give you a quotation from the European Academy on Religion and, let me get my screen over here, and Society. They wrote recently, while most of humanity is still in the middle of the coronavirus crisis, the highly influential members of the World Economic Forum have a plan for what should come next. It is called the Great Reset, and it envisions, listen now, a truly transhumanist future for us all. This is an aspect that has not been covered too much when people talk about the Great Reset. Many people think of, well, it's economic or, well, it's political in nature. But this one of transhumanism is going to be of great interest to us today. So what is transhumanism? This is one definition by the founder of modern transhumanism, Max Moore. Actually lives in Arizona, oddly enough, close to where I live. But he wrote, transhumanism promotes an interdisciplinary approach, that is NBIC, I'm going to explain that in a second, to understanding and evaluating the opportunities for enhancing the human condition and the human organism opened up by the advancement of technology. Attention is given to both present technologies like genetic engineering and information technology, and anticipated future ones, such as molecular nanotechnology and artificial intelligence. Max Moore, I will say in passing, is a very bright guy. I disagree with everything he says almost, but he has a PhD in philosophy, which is his background, his primary background. So this was a philosophical proposition exclusively at one time, but now it's morphed into something more tangible. Thanks to the advancement of technology today. We all know that technology is racing forward at breakneck speed. So let me explain just for a second what convergence or NBIC means, just so you can have a background on this. You notice the four quadrants. You notice that on the left side is physical, on the right side is biology, and if you look at the differentiation over on the right side of the screen, there's hardware and software involved here as well. But going around the outside of this in the lighter green, you see the words atoms, genes, neurons, and bits. What this refers to, and this is where the NBIC comes from, by the way, neurons starting in the lower left, neurons, bits, and then nanotechnology, atoms, and genes. The blending of these sciences together, which traditionally had been separate sciences in universities, for instance, information technology had its own department, so did genetic engineering and so on, they have undergone a merging of disciplines in the last 20, 25 years. Universities all around the world have contributed individuals from each one of these various departments to form another discipline within the university that is referred to as a convergence, or NBIC. The idea is that these are very closely related by, in particular, by data, by the ability to slice and dice these different disciplines with computer technology. And we've talked about this a little bit before, but this is a new thing. That's all I want to point out here. This is a relatively new thing. It didn't exist 30 years ago, but today it's quite prominent. And because of this convergence of sciences throughout the world, almost every major university now has this this particular convergence NBIC in view, and they're working on things. There has been a massive research project going on for all these years where papers, scientific papers and advancement papers have been written. Those are kind of papers in academia that nobody ever reads because they're just kind of only really available to academia. But they've made the rounds, and today we're dealing with the outcome of this, the fallout of this. So the summation of transhumanism is this. The central premise, this comes from the World Economic Forum, you'll notice. Mm-hmm. The central premise of transhumanism, then, is that biological evolution will eventually be overtaken by advances in genetic, wearable, and implantable technologies that artificially expedite the evolutionary process. Now, this is a statement that's full of different ideas, and I want to just comment on a couple. Starting about 25 to 30 years ago, there was a realization amongst the global elite that they had the possibility to use the new tools of biotechnology to essentially take over what they viewed as biological evolution that they believe, again, was part of 100 million years or whatever worth of biological evolution, and somehow man popped out of the primordial soup, and here we are today. They believed that evolution was unkind to the world and to mankind in general because it developed a lot of flaws and whatever that, they're argumentative, they like to go to war, et cetera, those sorts of things. They get other personality traits that they may not like. But they saw the possibility all of a sudden of taking over evolution, evolutionary process, not letting it be random anymore, but rather put a design, an intelligent design, if you will, on top of biological, what they viewed as biological evolution. And so this is exactly what the World Economic Forum is saying. This is not a new idea with them. This has been around a while, but biological evolution will eventually be overtaken by advances in genetic, wearable, and implantable technologies that artificially expedite the evolutionary process. So they want to change the evolutionary process. They want to speed it up. And the intelligent design that they want to overlay on life is one that comes up in their mind. This is the reimagining process. What do you want to be like 20, 30, 50, 100 years from now? And whatever that reimagining is, why they will say, well, we can do that now. We have the tools to do that. Well, a little backstory now. I'm going to take you back to a book that was written in 1994, 2 years after the Rio de Janeiro conference took place in Rio de Janeiro, but it was the first Earth Summit. It was the UNCED conference. That's the United Nations Conference on Economic Development. And it was a very important operation because this giant conference in Rio produced the Agenda 21 document that we talked about in the last time that I spoke about the Trilateral Commission and Sustainable Development, where it came from, how it came from. But the Agenda 21 conference produced two documents. We'll talk about that in just a second. One was the Agenda 21 book itself, and the second was the biodiversity assessment, or the biodiversity giant book that was like 1,150 pages long. We'll look at those in just a minute, but there were two in particular critics of the whole Agenda 21 process at the UNCED conference that had really high expectations going into the negotiations that there would be something positive come out. They believed as they came out nothing positive happened there, and they wrote this book called The Earth Brokers, and I recommend this book to anybody that wants to kind of dig into an alternative view of what happened in Rio. But this is, in my opinion, the first book, a serious scholarly book that came out discussing what really happened and what was really important at that Rio de Janeiro conference. And in this book, they made some startling revelations. And one of the first things that they said, which kind of ties into last week's presentation, is that they wrote, we argue that UNCED, that's the UN Conference on Economic Development, that was what the conference was referred to, we argue that UNCED has boosted precisely the type of industrial development, that is technocracy, that is destructive for the environment, the planet, and its inhabitants. We see how, as a result of UNCED, the rich will get richer, the poor poorer, while more and more of the planet is destroyed in the process. And all I can say is, this is pretty much exactly what's happened. Since then, the rich have got richer, the poor are now poorer, while more and more of the planet is destroyed in the process. And on any environmental front that you can look at around the world, you have to really stretch to find any improvements. And the most part, for the most part, there has been no improvement, but rather it's gone the other way. So, having trouble advancing my slide. So they further said, and this turns our focus now to the subject of this really today, the Biodiversity Convention. The Biodiversity Convention ran in parallel with the Agenda 21 conference. In other words, it was in Rio de Janeiro. It was the same people participating in it. It was just a different track. You'll see at conferences all over the world today that take place, if it's a really large conference, you'll see that they have different tracks going on within the same conference, maybe to focus on certain areas, and that's what they did at this Rio conference. So the Biodiversity Convention was going along in parallel. They were both at the same conference, but they produced two different documents as an outcome. The Earth Brokers wrote, or the authors of the Earth Brokers wrote this on page 43, and this is worth really looking at carefully. The convention implicitly equates the diversity of life, that is animals and plants. And let me point out, just remember, that the technocrat mindset, the transhumanist mindset, views humans as nothing more than animals. So humanity is also included in the statement. But it says they equates the diversity of life, animals and plants, to the diversity of genetic codes. By doing so, diversity becomes something modern science can manipulate. It promotes biotechnology as being essential for the conservation and sustainable use of biodiversity. Now, this is a new definition of biodiversity that most of you probably had not heard of before or been aware of, but this actually is the more accurate definition of what the United Nations meant when it created a doctrine of biodiversity. You know, we typically think of, well, that's the species in the forest and, you know, the different varieties of trees and animals and insects and so on. And that is one sense of it. But they changed that definition in Rio in 1992 to be concerned about genetic codes and taking over life, if you will. Diversity becomes something modern science can manipulate, they said. And this was just their testimony. They weren't making any type of a comment whether this is good or bad. But these two authors were just simply reporting what they saw. And yes, they were a little disgruntled with what they saw, but they're not trying to make a statement to us. They're just saying this is what they saw. So next up, after this, we see another statement on page 42. It says, the main stake raised by the Biodiversity Convention is the issue of ownership and control over biological diversity. The major concern, now listen to this, this is what they said, the major concern was protecting the pharmaceutical and emerging biotechnology industries. This is rather stunning because it wasn't about the environment. It wasn't about making the earth a better place to live. These authors wrote that the main stake, not a minor stake, the main stake raised by the Biodiversity Convention is the issue of ownership and control. That's intellectual property, if you need a little translation there, and control over biological diversity. And what did we find biological diversity was? Well, it was a control over genetic the genetic structure of life. And the major concern that they had, the reason they were making it the main stake, was to protect the pharmaceutical and emerging biotechnology industries. And I'll be honest with you, back in 1994, if I had read this book right as soon as it was published, I probably would not have noticed this phrase, because who understood what the emerging biotechnology industry even was? I didn't know back then. I mean, I was in the agricultural, I was raised in an agricultural community, and we understood that early on that there was something called bioengineered tomatoes or something that were going to grow bigger and better, maybe used for harvesting with mechanical machines. But if you ask anybody on the street, or even in academia, well, what are the emerging biotechnology industries? You'd get a blank stare. Today, this is very meaningful to us. We have a pretty good idea of where they emerged to, and that's where we stand today. So the Biodiversity Convention was about the control over genetic codes by using genetic engineering to be manipulated and remachined by these biotechnology industries and the pharmaceutical industries. Now, I will say that the pharmaceutical and the biotechnology industries have been joined at the hip for these many years, since 1992. So even though he's mentioning them separately here, we see them intertwining throughout modern history to create all sorts of things that have given us, let's say, modern-day fits at this point. For instance, let me back up just a minute. For instance, we've had the engineering of seeds, for instance. Monsanto was famous for this. They took virtually every food crop they could get their hands on, and they made certain genetic engineering changes to the seeds, to the DNA in the seeds, so that they would have some characteristic that could be perpetuated in the field. For instance, in the case of cotton, they introduced a natural phenomena called BT, which is which repels insects. And so they felt, well, we used to spray this on the crops with either hand sprayers or helicopters or whatever. But now we don't have to do that. We can engineer the seed itself the plant to produce this BT internally as it grows, so the bugs won't bother it. Well, this philosophy hasn't worked out very well, by the way. I won't go into that, but there's lots of disastrous cases on how BT cotton went the other way. But they've engineered virtually every seed crop you can imagine: rapeseed, canola, soybeans, wheat, corn. Just about everything that you consume has been engineered by Monsanto. And every time that they engineered a seed, they took it and they got a patent on it, and they said, we own that seed now, and you can't grow that seed unless you license it from us. Okay, so much for seeds. Seeds are living material. Part of that definition of biodiversity. Well, now we know that insects have been modified as well. They're genetically modifying, for instance, mosquitoes to be able to eradicate diseases that are carried by mosquitoes. We've seen other insects have been modified for different reasons as well. Crickets, for instance, have been genetically modified to be potentially used as a food source of protein for humans. I don't like that thought, but that would be a meal I'd pass on. But then you have things like fish have been genetically engineered. Salmon now can be raised in a salmon farm to grow twice as fast as they used to grow in the past, and that means more meat production and more profits for whoever. And then you have other animals like cattle and pigs have been genetically modified significantly. So sheep and pigs are being modified, for instance, with human genes. That's kind of a transgenic process where they take genes out of humans and plant them into pigs, and then the pigs can grow organs that can be transplanted into humans. When somebody needs a kidney or perhaps a heart or whatever, it can be grown in a pig and taken out of the pig and put in the human. So animals have been genetically modified. And just about everything else, you know, birds, chickens, and turkeys have been modified as well. If you think about it, all up and down the line, everything except for humans so far have been genetically modified, and heavily so. The seed industry is just over the top. The only thing that's escaped, the only living thing that has escaped modification, has been the human population. You see where I'm going with this. If the tools today were available to, say, Adolf Hitler during World War II, the outcome likely would have been altogether different. But we see this philosophy now is rising again. Whereas Hitler's means of cleaning up the gene pool, if you will, was pretty simple. Just get rid of everybody you don't like. If you don't like the way they look, well, kill them. If you don't like the way they think, well, kill them too. If you don't like the color of their skin, that's a good reason to kill them. And if there's some other, you know, part of the demonized scapegoat, that what the Jews became, well, kill them too. Just get rid of them. Get them out of the gene pool. Therefore, they won't multiply and they won't contaminate the gene pool again anymore. Well, that was his simplistic view of eugenics, cleaning up the gene pool, according to his vision, of course. He reimagined that himself. Today, it's taken a different twist, you see. It's the same old meme. How are we going to clean up the gene pool? Well, now we can just do it directly. We can change, we can edit the seeds, the things we don't like, we can edit it out or edit in new things, and we can create life in our own image, whatever is in our mind to do. Now, this is very disturbing as we look at this, but today's technology is targeted on the human population for the very first time in a big, big way, at least on a massive scale. There have been some genetic therapies that have been available before this, don't get me wrong. But with today's pandemic and with the shots, the messenger RNA-based shots that are being used today around the world, this is the first massive use of this, and experimental use, I might add as well, on an entire human population. So let's talk about those two books that were generated from that conference in 1992. And the first one I want to talk about is the Agenda 21 book. This is available. You can see right on it. It says United Nations Program of Action from Rio. And you can see the logo down below, the United Nations and the UNEP logo as well. This is their official book. It's still available on Amazon and other places. You can buy it. I recommend people do, just so they can see we're not spinning a tale here. So I did a search. Fortunately, I have an electronic copy of this, a scanned copy of this book. And I did a search for several words, because word frequency in documents is very important to me as a researcher. I like to see what's mentioned most, and often when whatever is mentioned most is kind of the theme of whatever it is you're looking at. So if you do a little word count when you're doing research and stuff, you can figure out what the writer is trying to get at and kind of what's underlying his, his basis, his theory. So within the Agenda 21 book, I searched for some words, and they're listed here: genetic, genes, biotech, DNA, ribosome. And I found that the word genetic appeared 22 times in this, only it's a 351-page book. Genes was mentioned twice, biotech was mentioned 23 times, DNA once, and ribosome once. And what that adds up to is 49 mentions in our general area here in 351 pages, which gives a saturation count of 14%. In other words, 14% of the pages within the Agenda 21 book dealt with this concept of biodiversity as it relates to genetic issues, to genes, to biotechnology, et cetera. And that's not really particularly disturbing. If you just read this book and only this book, you'd say, well, that's a minor theme. It's an important theme, obviously, or they wouldn't have mentioned it on, 50 out of 350 pages. But you would not say that this was the main theme, the main stake, if you will, of Agenda 21. And indeed, it was not. If you read the book, it was not the main issue. But this was an important issue. But when we get to the biodiversity assessment, this is the book that was popped out of that conference. it's a giant book. It's like binder size paper, but it's like 1,152 pages long. If you drop this book on, I mean, it's 3 inches thick. You drop this book on your foot, you're going to say, ouch. Well, I did the same word search in this document, and lo and behold, the word genetic was mentioned 518 times. The word genes, 162. Biotech, 112. DNA, 97 times. And ribosome was mentioned 17 times. So in 1,152 pages, 900 of those pages contained at least one reference to genetic issues here, like what we're talking about, 78% yield. Now, this confirms beyond a shadow of a doubt that the Earth Brokers authors knew exactly what they were talking about. This, as I mentioned, they were just simply eyewitnesses. They didn't make any value judgment on it whatsoever. But this confirms that there's, to me anyway, that their assessment was absolutely 100% correct. The main stake on the Global Biodiversity Convention and this assessment book that came out of that was specifically about genetic modification of life. And you can see on the front of this book, by the way, the little fish and, you know, fishes there down in the water. I don't know exactly what that pretends because it's an overlay. But when you think biodiversity, think genetic modification. So this kind of proves the point that the whole concept of modifying genes in living things has been a big, big issue, if not the main issue since 1992. This flew under the radar for so many years. But now, because thanks to everything going on today for the last 2 years, this has come into full view. This was the plan. This was the original plan. All other forms of life have already been genetically engineered. The final frontier, the last frontier, was humanity itself. And that is exactly what is happening today. So I want to make this statement to tie in between last week and this week again, just so that you can understand what old Klaus Schwab is up to. Because he's pushing both technocracy, which is sustainable development, and he's pushing transhumanism at the very same time. And you say, well, okay, there's people and there's the system where people live. Well, technocracy is to the societal structure, if you will. It's to the how the economic system will work, how the social system will work. But it's a brand new system. As he said, the Great Reset isn't something that we know from the past century. The Great Reset is altogether new. But technocracy is to societal structure and operation as transhumanism is to the humans who will live there. The transhuman condition, then, is a genetically modified person. You could liken it to Hitler's Superman, which is where we get Superman from, by the way, as a cartoon character. But the transhuman man is no different than the Superman that came out of Germany in the 30s and 40s. And so nothing is new here. Concept is the same. It's just expressed in a different way. Transhumanism is the idea for Klaus Schwab of those type of people that he wants to live in a restructured world. That implies, by the way, that those of us who belong to the old world, as the new world is created, we are not suitable. We are not compatible with this new machinery of the transformed world. So we need to be transformed ourselves to live in this new world. And I want to say that Hitler's, just in passing, I'm not an expert on Hitler or World War II necessarily at all, but I want to point out that Hitler was very pointed about this, that the Superman, the super race that he intended to create, was that race that would inhabit his so-called thousand-year Reich. Those would be the ones that would enter in to that thousand-year Reich to populate the world and reform the whole thing from ground zero all the way up to outer space, I guess. So nothing has really changed here. But now we have, people coming out of the World Economic Forum. You can see this this lady here, Ida, is a member of parliament in Denmark, and she's speaking at a World Economic Forum background there. You can see with a potted plant behind her head, it's probably appropriate here. But she says, welcome to 2030. I own nothing, have no privacy, and life has never been better. Well, you see, this is the whole vision of Klaus Schwab, the World Economic Forum, the technocrats, the Trilateral Commission, and the whole bunch of them, this global elite. This is their idea today, that the world will be so transformed that you will be stripped down to own nothing, including not just the physical things, not mind you, but privacy as well. The last bastion of privacy is your mind, the thoughts that you think. They want that too. It's not just that they want our property, but they want the very thinking process that we have that goes on the side of our brain. And she, of course, says with great Pollyannish proclaim, life has never been better. Well, I have news for her. If she really thinks that life has never been better, it's only because she has a giant vacuum in that pretty little blonde head that just cannot process thoughts. There's no way you can be happy unless you've been thoroughly brainwashed and, you know, from the inside out by having nothing, no privacy, etc. But you also may not have any ownership over your own body, because as time goes on, these genetic firms, genetic engineering firms, are claiming patent rights, intellectual rights over their own creation. So it may well be that when you say, I own nothing, yes, you own nothing. You have no physical external things, but you own no physical internal things either. And I want to close with this slide, because this really kind of sums it up where this has come, and it's very pointed. This is on Moderna's website. I published the whole picture here so that you can go and look at it yourself. Just go to Moderna's website, go to their About Us page, and you will see this. Welcome to Moderna. We believe messenger RNA, that's mRNA, the precursor to making proteins, the template for making proteins in your body, is the software of life. The software of life. What do we do to software? Well, we engineer software. We constantly want to improve software. We release new versions of software when it comes, you know, when we make these modifications. And very often, of course, we go through the debugging process where we correct problems that crop up. And, you know, life goes on. The software of life, they say. Well, the software of life mentality applied to human beings is exactly what we're seeing right now. And if anybody can't, if anybody does not understand the context of this about page right here is about us, they just either can't reason, have no logical capabilities whatsoever, but this is probably one of the most telling and frightening comments that you could ever see on a vaccine, on a whatever you call it, not vaccine, but it's, you know, the messenger RNA injection. This would be the scariest thing you could possibly see, because the software of life means that since life is in humans, in their view, they're not inoculating seeds or fish or animals, they're inoculating humans. The software of life now has become the playfield of the global elite who are trying to create a humanity that will enter into their own thousand-year Reich, if you will. And this is exactly what we saw before in history. The names have changed. The sophistication of presentation has changed. But the underlying ideology, principles, etc., and goals have not changed. So I will say thank you to that at that. And I will stop the share on my screen. And if we have some Q&A, that would be fine. But that's the information that I wanted to put out today.
Thank you very much, Patrick. at first glance, this is another, to me, this is another instance of their using euphemisms in order to stand things on its head. Biodiversity, as I learned from your presentation, is really nothing else but gaining full control over humans. Everything else is pretty much, in their view at least, under their control. Now over humans, with the help of the pharmaceutical and biotechnological industry. My question is, Is this not clear enough for people to see, or why has there not been an outcry, at least from the churches, because this is what they should consider someone trying to play God?
Yes, they should. And this is playing God. Almost everything in the world today that these people look at, living things, when they say, we can do better, and by the way, that's a phrase you hear at the World Economic Forum, we can do better, build back better.
Yeah.
We can do better. That indicates, and of course, they don't believe in intelligent design in the first place, but those who do will say, well, these people believe that whatever God might have created, if they believe in God as an intelligent designer, he was really screwed up. He's all messed up. He goofed up. He did it wrong. We can do better. We can fix those problems that he seeded into the system, and we can create a life that we want to live on planet Earth. And when transhumanists start talking, by the way, about eternal life, it gets really spooky, because they're looking for technology to advance to the point where they can literally become immortal. And they say that openly. Max Moore has written about this extensively. And so this is not just a transient thing, like, you know, our goal is just, well, we want to cure heart disease or something. No, that's not it. That's part of it, maybe. But the ultimate goal is immortality, which, of course, God has something to say about, in the Bible at least, that it's appointed for man once to die, and then comes judgment. Well, everybody's died so far on planet Earth that's lived. They think they're going to be the first group of people that don't die, that will live on in the computer or in an avatar or maybe just their own body if they can keep fixing it up and, you know, putting it together with baling wire.
Yeah. Heaven has become the cloud.
That's right. Heaven is a cloud.
I would like to ask you, so the jabs that we are currently seeing being applied, they don't seem to improve the health of people, but rather cause problems. So is this part of, like, do you think this might be like a, I see three options. I mean, they could serve as like a means to claim like patent rights, like with these individuals, you know, maybe with like this mRNA injective. I mean, that's maybe one option. The other options are these, the ones that are not going to be part of the crowd, that's going to be immortal or rather disappear rather quickly. Or is this maybe like part of a larger scheme that you first apply this stuff at the moment, but we don't know what's really in it, and then they add something else that puts them into this realm of them becoming like improved, better, immortal. What's your take on that?
Yeah. Well, not being a scientist, I just, disclaimer, not being a scientist, not being a medical doctor, just a person that's looking at this whole thing like you all are. if this shot is not improving the health of people, and it clearly is not, you've already documented that very well, if the purpose of the injection is not to strengthen the immune system specifically, and if even the incidental outcomes have been serious injuries to people all over the world from having taken the injection, then I would say if it was their stated goal that they wanted to improve the health of people, they have utterly failed to do so. That indicates that there's another reason, that there's another agenda for these things. It's just clear as crystal that there's some other agenda that they have behind the scenes that has nothing to do with improving the health of people. Even though they have to have an excuse for that needle to go into the arm in order to inject the messenger RNA, and now in India there's the DNA vaccine that's being produced, right? So people that say, oh, RNA doesn't affect DNA. listen, if you think it's going to stop at RNA, you're crazy. It's already gone beyond that. It's gone to straight DNA injections under the skin by an Indian pharmaceutical company. And I see one person nodding their head here is probably from India. And it's absolutely true. They're going after the genome of the human condition. And I don't think this has anything to do with the promise of, oh, we're going to make life better for you because, you know, the United Nations has a habit of this. When there are 17 sustainable development goals that say there's going to transform the world, the first thing they start out with, well, we're going to eliminate poverty everywhere. Oh, really? That's some grandiose promise. It's never been done, and we're poorer. The world is poorer now than it was in 1992. And all the other promises they make on the front end of it, oh, we're going to have jobs for everyone, jobs with dignity, and oh, we're going to have lifelong education opportunities. I mean, everybody's going to have a home to live in, too. All these promises that they've made were vacuous, absolutely vacuous. They meant nothing, and they were not true, and they have not come true, and they cannot deliver on those promises ever. Now we have the same scenario working out with this shot. They're promising that it's going to strengthen your immune system, that it's going to prevent the disease from getting a hold of you and your body. And it hasn't happened. It's been a false promise. And that, again, that indicates that there is another agenda at work here that has nothing to do with the health of humans, much less that the United Nations ever intended really to eliminate poverty in the world. They did not intend to eliminate poverty. It was just propaganda. And I would say the whole propaganda that these vaccines, these shots are going to completely save the whole world from this ugly, terrible virus, is absolutely vacuous. It's not true. It's propaganda. My guess is they know exactly what they're talking about. And as they produce the propaganda, they know it's propaganda.
Thanks.
I have a question. Thank you, Mr. Wood, for your excellent presentation. It sounds to me that they are trying to assume the role of playing God when you're talking about the takeover of our evolutionary process. And I was struck by the analogy to software and what you need to do to software, continually update it. You've got to have your 2.0, 3.0, human 2.0. And it seems to me that these injections will never stop until we get what they're doing and that the masses say no more. And that this seems to have been a large experiment to see how many people would capitulate with the fear-mongering that they did, the lies that they have. Basically, because there's been no informed consent, but coerced people into lining up voluntarily, they think, for these shots. And do you think it'll ever stop?
Well, it can stop. That's a great question. It cannot stop. And I'll tell you why it cannot stop. It may be a little bit oblique to what you would think initially, but once you've been injected with this, it's obvious that your immune system is being changed. Maybe not the same in every case, but the immune system is changed when you take a series of these shots. That means that as future viruses come down the road, whatever they might be, man-made or not, doesn't matter. Whenever future viruses come down the road, your natural immunity now has been messed up by these shots. And if you want to be saved from that new ugly virus coming down the line someday and people are really dying, in serious numbers around the world, you will have no choice but to take another shot to maybe eliminate or, take you out of harm's way. There'd be no end to it. On that basis alone, there'd be no end to it. And that's, in my mind, that's perfectly logical. They so debased the natural immunity of the world that the world is basically now immunocompromised. The whole lot of it that have taken the shots are immunocompromised. Now, instead of just, I'm thinking back to the whole AIDS debacle, where the only way they treated AIDS for a long time was with this giant cocktail of drugs, they called it. They mixed a whole bunch of different things together. It would cost a fortune to to get this cocktail of drugs, and they said, well, that'll beat back the HIV virus in your body. Well, thank you. I guess, you know, maybe it did to some people. I didn't have AIDS, so I don't have a clue. I wasn't close to the community. But the same kind of thing, mentality, is working now. In the future, if you want to be out of harm's way on getting this maybe horrible virus that might be floating around someday, you're going to be at the mercy of anybody on the outside that has something to stick into your body to give you some kind of temporary immunity to it. And I think, you know, that's got to be in their mind here. Once the conduit into your arm is established, there really is no logical stopping point. Even if you rebelled 5 years down the road and say, I'm not going to do this anymore, I'll never take a shot again. Well, that's fine. But you may well die prematurely because you do contract some virus, but you have no natural immunity to withstand it.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Unfortunate. Thank you.
Hi, good evening, Mr. Wood. Sorry, Rajini, you can go before me. Sorry, I didn't.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that, Desmond. Say it again.
As you wish, Dexter. As you wish. If you want to go first, go first.
No, please go for sweet things, Rajini. You can proceed, Rajini.
Sorry. Thank you, sir, for your testimony. It was really important. I would like to illustrate and make links with our perpetrators. You spoke about the seeds. And so I would like to raise a point. It was about the bunker of the apocalypse on February 28 of 2008. The Svalbard Global Sea Vault was officially inaugurated. It's an underground vault on the Norwegian island of Spitsbergen, intended to keep seeds of all the food crops of the planet. And who organized that? They said in the article, Norwegian government, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, DuPont CUNY Hybrid, Syngenta, the Rockefeller, CGR, Monsanto, the Global Crop Diversity Trust, and a French organization say they are skeptical, about the reason of the creation of this bunker. Indeed, the founders of the project are all part of seed industry lobbies whose current policy is not oriented towards more biodiversity, but on the contrary, seek to reduce access to current living genetic resources and contribute to their annihilation. So on. So I think it illustrates very well what you were explaining about biodiversity and intellectual property. And the second point, it was not a question, but the second point also to illustrate what you say, because Professor Peter McCulloch explained yesterday that in a scientific study, Alden and Al, Lund University, Sweden, that confirms one of our worst fears, and I'm reading what he says, the exogenous genetic material coding for the dangerous spike protein is reverse transcribed into the human genome. Possible long-term constitutive expression, synthesis of disease-promoting lethal spike. So it's exactly what you said. It's a scientific study published February 25. So it's yesterday. And it's exactly what you say. And it's very concerning.
Yeah. You know, I remember when I first read about the seed bank up in the ice in the north. And it was a little disturbing at first, and I thought, well, maybe that makes sense, you know, that we should kind of store these heritage seeds, they're called. That's the original seeds before they were modified, right? And so as they modified all these seeds and spread them around the world, they realized that there could be a doomsday scenario situation here where it caused real trouble. So they took samples of all of the heritage seeds. That's the untouched seeds, and those are the ones that went up to the seed vault. it just kind of occurs to me, I'd have no proof of this, and I haven't read up on it, but I think I will, based on what you just said, Virginie, because I wonder if they're storing sperm and eggs up there as well now for humans, you know, just kind of based on the whole thing. Well, maybe we should preserve some original human DNA in the seed bank up there with all the other seeds. That's just speculation, but it crossed my mind.
Well, considering that, I'm sorry, Virginie, considering that Bill Gates is or was closely aligned with Jeffrey Epstein, it is, I don't think it's far-fetched, your conclusion.
I know. Well, for the purposes of this particular conference, I know we have plenty of facts to stick to, and there may be some more facts that come up in the near future. But I'll tell you, just the case as it is right now is very damning.
Yeah.
And it needs specific. I know it needs specific investigation on, you know, some very fine points. Mm-hmm. We've got the basic theory down pretty well, and it's going to be even more as you get the rest of the speakers here. But the theory is good. Some of the particulars are already on the table, but now we have an avenue to get into the absolute smallest, finest part of this, where these conspiracies actually took place,
mm-hmm.
and where they actually wrote about this thing. So there needs to be probably a host of Freedom of Information Act requests. That applies at least in America, if not some other countries, to flesh out some of these emails and some of these conversations and tapes and recordings and et cetera that might have taken place over the time, to really find not just the smoking gun, but the spent bullet as well.
Mr. Hood, thank you so much for your evidence. I have noted today your evidence is much more focused on the conference for the United Nations that took place in 1992 at Rio, de Janeiro, Brazil. So what I want to find out from you, Mr. Hood, since 1992 to date, has there been any major biotechnological advance in relation to humanity? Can you think of any major advancements besides now that we're talking about the mRNA vaccines?
Well, as far as advancements, do you mean positive advancements or
positive
negative
advancements? No, positive.
Okay, well, you know, there may be some incidental positive enhancements that have taken place. And I say incidental because maybe it wasn't even intended in the first place, or they just did it by accident. But the overwhelming majority at this point, and this is just my opinion, the overwhelming majority of genetic modification that has been done has resulted in negative outcomes. In other words, it hasn't helped anything. It hasn't helped the ecosystem. It hasn't helped, people. Now, I'm thinking back when corn was first genetically modified. There was a big scare in America where all of a sudden people started buying tortilla chips off the, in the grocery store, right? In big bags made out of corn.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden people were having violent reactions and having to go into hospital and stuff because this corn was making them sick because it was genetically modified. Now, why couldn't they have figured that out before they threw it into a store and started making as much money as they could off of it? Well, maybe they could have, but they didn't. And there have been negative outcomes like that you know, are just all over the landscape. I wish I could find some more positive trends, but I just can't find them.
Okay. So will your evidence then be to the extent when it comes to this COVID-19 mRNA vaccines, will you actually regard it as the most advanced biotechnological advancement, specifically when it comes to humanity to date?
Absolutely. This is the holy grail of transhumanism here. It is the holy grail. This is the holy grail, by the way, that Adolf Hitler had before, too. I mean, he had the same idea. He just didn't have the means to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I want to quickly just reflect back to the evidence that we currently have and which has actually been presented to the grand jury to date. And for that, I actually make specific reference to Professor Antonietta Getty. And I quickly just want to put the jury into perspective here. She's got a doctor in experimental physics at the University of Bologna, which is Italy. She's got a PhD in biomedical technologies, bioengineering at the Faculty of Medicine of the University of Bologna, Italy. So what I want to focus on is specifically her evidence and basically tied in with the biotechnological advancements, technocracy. That's basically your evidence that you have given previously. You've actually re-emphasized a technocracy, basically just bringing it in line more with biotechnology. So the evidence that we currently, that has actually been presented to, that will be the jury, and I'm quickly just going to make reference. This is the very first time that nanoparticles has been used in medicine. This product is dangerous. Products is dangerous. The body cannot counter active these particles, and these particles can create a magnetic field. It's the first time that nanoparticles has actually been found in medicine. So just with that two specific issues, and that is the evidence that we have presented to the jury, is that all in line with your biotechnological advancement, your evidence, technocracy, is that in line?
Yes, it is. And you remember the chart that I just presented about NBIC. The NBIC stood for the N stood for nanotechnology. Nanotechnology is the manipulation of matter using external means. That is, you know, we think of maybe getting a hammer and a saw to build a building or a house, but in nanotechnology, you're talking about being able to artificially put atoms together in different configurations and making up different types of, you know, different types of matter or devices or whatever. And this has been experimented in universities for a long time now. I'd say probably 15, 20 years that technology is advancing where a computer, for instance, can actually change the structure of something remotely by issuing commands and stuff to it. So this goes hand in hand with biotechnology. That's what I'm saying, okay? The two disciplines are combined in the universities. Would they think to use that in today's injections? I don't know why not. You know, so it seemed to be perfectly compatible with the science that's out there that they've been working with for years.
So then in conclusion, Mr. Hood, you have actually also now stated in your evidence, this all comes down to the NBIC. So squarely, when we look at even what Moderna has said, and you have actually presented evidence, and in a matter of fact, it is common knowledge, and it is evidence that can be admitted into this grand jury proceedings, and that is when Moderna made the statement that it is mRNA is the software of life, which means it can be hacked. So in conclusion, you can basically just say yay or nay. This query actually fits in with what they actually planned in 1992 in Rio de Janeiro. And this is basically now where we are at in the fulfillment of the manifestation of the technocracy plan and agenda that is being played out in each and every country in the world.
Yay.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
I have one final short question. So do you think, because you just mentioned that you only see like destructive or like only accidental positive developments with regards to the bioengineering or like GMO aspect. So do you think they're keeping all this maybe positive outcomes from us? Maybe they have something in their, you know, up the sleeves that's really positive, or are they basically like in a complete denial that it's not working and they're not going to be immortal, or no one is going to be immortal because if they don't have the technologies at hand?
Right. That's a good question. I'm not sure that they care whether there's positive or negative outcomes in a sense, but the overwhelming evidence at this point, and as I, from my view, is that evidence of harm is being hidden, not evidence of success. They would have every reason to put out evidence of success right now, tangible success, to convince people this really works, but they can't do it. What they're hiding is all of the injuries that are happening, the data, and I mean, almost in every agency, there's been scandals already where data is discovered months later that was not released, intentionally not released, because it would taint their narrative. So I think the evidence points the other way. They're hiding the bad data, but they just don't have any good data to put out there.
That makes perfect sense, Patrick. Because this is one of the things that we seem to be seeing through the evidence that's been presented to this grand jury is vaccine-induced immunity doesn't even exist in these cases because there is no immunity. On the other hand, natural immunity is perfect. How can they deny this? I suppose that you will not object to the conclusion that the only thing that they're doing right now is lying to us in order to keep us from understanding that they can't do what they promised to do.
That's exactly right. And I just back up a little further. Whatever they promised to do in the very first instance, at the very beginning of this, whatever they promised that they would do, most likely was a lie from the start. They never had any intention or ability to produce what they said they were going to produce. My guess is they knew that perfectly well at the time. Well, that needs to be proven, but I think that's kind of the logical way to look at it, that they knew they were lying from the get-go, yeah. And they intentionally deceived people into doing something that they would not have otherwise done. That's the nature of propaganda anyway. We ought to know something about propaganda after 100 years of it.
Yeah.
We've had nothing but nonstop propaganda from the get-go. And I wouldn't believe anything. If I can determine that a piece has propaganda in it and it is a propaganda piece, I'll throw the whole cotton picking thing out. I rip it up in shreds and throw it away. I don't want to pollute my mind. What they said from the beginning, we are going to prevent the disease from getting into your body. That's what they said, point blank. And just the opposite has happened. That meant, I mean, how can a scientist be so stupid to think that they could get away saying something like that, have any evidence behind it? It was untested. It didn't pass anybody's regimen of, you know, FDA approval or anywhere else. And yet they could say it's going to be 95% effective. You won't get the disease if you take the shot. Bald face lie. Just completely false.
Yeah, that's, I suppose, the only conclusion we can draw from this. So if they're lying about this, there's got to be some other objective out there. Thank
That's
you.
Exactly right.
Thank you very much, Patrick. Virginie?